Pat Stack.
Level. I don't know the rules anymore or something's changed, but I can't believe it.
It's a 4-0 goal. Big cheer. Are you kidding me? What is that?
It's NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve Hockey Crew on your home of the Winnipeg Jets and all things NHL. TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this evening at TSN1290.ca, good evening, universe, and welcome to NHL This Week, the season premiere of NHL This Week, as we're live on TSN 1290. We're with you for the next 3 hours until 9 p.m. tonight, as we're going to get you set for the 2017-18 NHL season, which gets underway exactly 24 hours from right now. The Jets and the Maple Leafs, a game you can hear exclusively on TSN 1290.
Let's go, Drew. Drop the puck right now.
You're ready to go, Ezzy?
Let's do it.
We're just going to, you know, drop the gloves right off the opening face-off and get going. It's about time we start punching each other in the face. Yeah, you spend a lot of time with this guy. You know, it's about time we get a little frisky up in here.
Drew, if we're going to drop the gloves, I'll tie one hand behind my back just to give you a little bit of a chance.
You're nothing if not a gentleman. That's true. And, you know, I bruise very easily, so, I mean, I'm not about to start fighting with you, but I appreciate the gesture nonetheless.
I would never hit you. You're my boy. Come on.
I've had the urge. Remus and you almost got into a fight once.
Oh, this I know.
Yeah, that's true.
This I got to hear.
We'll tell it off air. Yeah. Shaunosaur is the other voice you're hearing there. That was
Things got a little heated with Remo and
I. Yeah, it was in a public venue as well. Well, things got a little heated. We'll talk about it off air.
It was actually a library.
Yeah, that's right. They were dropping the gloves at the library. This is years ago now, but you know, you guys have kissed and made up since then. But it was.
Well, we made up. I wouldn't say we kissed.
Yeah, well, you know, figuratively you kissed. In any event, we start, of course, with the Winnipeg Jets, the final roster decisions made earlier today. And it was a bit of a surprise, as a lot of people had this guy penciled into the Winnipeg Jets lineup when training camp began. That's Kyle Connor. He's heading down to the Manitoba Moose. Does not crack the Winnipeg Jets opening day lineup. The team chooses to go with Brandon Tanev, you could say, over Kyle Connor. I mean, it's maybe you can't make the direct comparison, but a lot of people are saying that Brandon Tanev got the spot and Kyle Connor is down, going to start the year in the AHL with the Manitoba Moose. Your thoughts on the final Winnipeg Jets roster as training camp comes to an end, as we're 24 hours away from puck drop. Your thoughts on Brandon Tanev over Kyle Connor?
Yeah, I would throw Nick Batan in there, sure, as well. I don't know if it was just Brandon Tanev, but I know where you're going with this, Drew. And let's be honest, guys, it was a very competitive training camp, right?
The most competitive we've seen.
And Sean, I didn't think anybody really separated themselves in the bottom three, or if you want to call it the bottom six. And Kyle Connor, I wouldn't say had a bad training camp, but I wouldn't say he had a great training camp either. And I thought that he had his offensive chances, but he didn't necessarily earn a spot outright, whether that's on the third line or the fourth line. And it was a bit of a surprise here in Jetsland when Kyle Connor was reassigned to the Manitoba Moose, because we assumed that he might start tomorrow night either on the third line or the fourth line, right? So it's a bit of a shock. And, you know, I realize there are a lot of Jets fans out there who are up in arms, but the reality is, guys, I mean, the Jets aren't going to have any shortage of guys that can put the puck in the net. Now, I'm not saying that I would take Brandon Tanev over Kyle Connor, because Kyle Connor obviously has the higher upside. First round pick back in 2015, you know, Hobie Baker, finalist with the University of Michigan. So I was surprised, but I wouldn't read too much into it, because I think Kyle Connor will be back in a Jets uniform in the next 3 or 4 weeks.
Sean, you know, haven't we seen enough of Brandon Tanev last season to sort of know what he is and know what he brings to the table? And I don't want to disparage him, because he's an NHL player or a professional hockey player, and I'm certainly not. But don't we know Brandon Tanev's ceiling? And there's no real reason why he needs to start in the NHL as a call-up. If the injury bug strikes, certainly. He's certainly one of those guys who can come in and play a role, however limited, up from the Manitoba Moose to the NHL. Isn't it time now that we see a different type of player aside from a Brandon Tanev to start the year?
Yeah, I don't know if we've seen the ceiling yet of Brandon Tanev. He's not a young guy by any means, but he's not over the hill on the back nine of his career yet. You know, the guy, he talked about training all offseason with a variety of NHL players, so not really sure. Maybe he was focusing on something else other than scoring goals. You know, maybe there are little intricacies that Paul Maurice sees in his development that are, that have developed and have improved. The way I kind of, I'm trying to wrap my head around this, because I had Kyle Connor making the team out of training camp, is that the PK and defensive side to Brandon Tanev kind of outweighed the offensive capabilities of Kyle Connor, or where he's at in his development right now. You're not going to send Kyle Connor out on the penalty kill. Brandon Tanev had a decent look as a peak, as a penalty killer this offseason, this preseason, pardon me. And I just kind of feel that the defensive abilities of Tanev outweighed the offense that Kyle Connor showed. Kyle Connor had some chances to put the puck in the net and couldn't capitalize, and that's nothing against the guy. However, Brandon Tanev maybe showed a little more on his PK than Kyle Connor did when he had the puck in the slot for a quick shot on net.
And Sean, we don't even know if Brandon Tanev is going to play.
And that's another thing I was going
to
say. Andrew Kopp says he is good to go, and Kopp was the extra skater at today's practice. So we don't know yet where he's going to fit into that lineup.
But doesn't the just not having Kyle Connor on this roster change the dynamic of the Winnipeg Jets lines from?
Absolutely.
You know, we've heard a lot about the need and how the best teams in the league have three scoring lines. And most people would say that with Kyle...
The good teams do.
The good teams do. They have three scoring lines, and then they have that fourth line that is more dedicated or more focused on the defensive side, more of a checking line. Doesn't the absence of Kyle Connor change that dynamic dramatically? The Jets would have a very good top six, obviously, with, you know, with Perreault and with Scheifele and with Wheeler and then with Laine and with Little and Ehlers. A very good top six. But isn't that bottom six now just a sort of a head-scratching mishmash of some scorers, i.e. Nick Petan, i.e. Marco Dano, and some checkers, you know, Sean Matthias, Joel Armia, and there's just no real continuity and there's no real identity to those bottom six players.
Yeah, I think to answer your question, Drew, not having Kyle Connor up with the Jets changes the dynamic, but I wouldn't say it changes the dynamic dramatically.
Yeah, I agree.
That's two D's in a row. Let's not forget, guys, Kyle Connor's never proved himself at the NHL level yet. He's only got 20 games of NHL experience, so it's not like he's got a 20-goal season in his pocket, right? So I agree with you. Having Kyle Connor up there gives you probably another threat on the wing, Drew. But, you know, you mentioned Marco Dano, you mentioned Nick Petan, Andrew Kopp. I mean, for me, if you want the third line to be a scoring line, it has to feature one of Matthew Perreault or Marco Dano. Those two players have more of an offensive upside than Andrew Kopp. Ideally, and this is no offense to Andrew Kopp, you ideally want Andrew Kopp on your fourth line. And you could argue that you want Adam Lowry on your fourth line. Joel Armia, I think, has more of an offensive upside to be on that third line. But when you're talking about not having Connor in the lineup and who's going to replace that offense, the Jets have a lot of players that are going to replace that offense. And you mentioned the top six. I mean, we know Mark Scheifele, Patrick Laine, Blake Wheeler, Nikolai Ehlers. We know those guys can put the puck in the net. Matthew Perreault is going to start the season on the first line. So I don't necessarily think that the Jets are going to have trouble scoring goals early in the season because Kyle Connor's not going to be there. But I'm with you, Drew. I mean, I thought Kyle Connor would make this team start the season on the third line, maybe get a look on the second line, maybe even the first line. So for me, it's a bit of a head-scratcher because if you're asking me who is better between Nick Petan, Tanev, and Connor, I might actually say Nick Petan.
I would agree.
So I'm not surprised Petan made the team.
No.
But I am surprised Tanev made the team. And that's more so based on his play last year.
Can't you, you know, you mentioned Nick Petan. And so now, you know, the lines today at practice, you have Marco Dano, Sean Matthias, and Nick Petan. And I guess, you know, Petan and Dano are more offensively inclined. And Sean Matthias has scored at the NHL level.
Yep.
So is that your offensive third line? And then Kopp, Lowry, and Armia are your checking fourth line? I mean, Brandon Tanev...
It's almost like 3A and 3B. And you got to throw in Matt Hendricks, who's injured. If he's healthy, he's mostly likely on that fourth line. And then, you know, you maybe have another guy sent down to the Moose, right?
So, sure.
These opportunities have come up, Sean, because Matt Hendricks was injured and Andrew Kopp was injured. And quite frankly, none of these players really stood out to me so much that they made the team glowingly, right? So Kyle Connor, for example, I thought would come into camp and he would score 3 or 4 goals in the preseason and he would cement himself as a member of this team, and he didn't do it.
Let me ask you this then. You mentioned that nobody really stood out to you as quote-unquote making the team. Like, it's sort of, you know, a coin flip. If to some extent it's a coin flip, aren't you best off putting out your most talented players as part of that coin flip? And all due respect again, Kyle Connor is more talented than a lot of the other players that he, you know, lost out to today.
Offensively.
And there are ways. I'm not saying that. And, you know, if he's being deployed in a third line role, he's not going to be going up against other teams' best players. You're insulating him. You're protecting him in that role. Or if you want him playing in the top six, you're protecting him because he's playing with guys who are defensively responsible while offensively talented in Scheifele and Wheeler, guys who can protect him as he learns the ropes of the NHL. What development is he learning? What is he still, you know, growing as an NHL player? How is he still growing as an NHL player by starting the season with the Manitoba Moose?
Well, I think the argument would be that he's going to play first-line minutes, right? He's going to be out there in the first power play, Kyle Connor, that is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he wouldn't get that opportunity with the Jets, right? But I'm with you, Drew. I mean, I'm not going to argue with you that that Kyle Connor doesn't deserve to make this team. Obviously, they chose Brandon Tanev because of the role they want him to play. But at the end of the day, I don't think the Jets' season is going to be made or broken by having Kyle Connor, Brandon Tanev, or some of these other third and fourth line players take the next step in their career. It's going to come down to the way they play defensively and if the goaltending improves. Mm-hmm. So I realize the big news today, and we got to talk about it, was Kyle Connor being assigned to the Moose. But really, to me, it's not as important, I think, as some people are making it out to be.
Aren't you, to some extent, handicapping yourself by not deploying your best? I know the talk about roles and you want guys who are, you know, penalty killers on the team, and that was the argument for the Matt Hendricks signing, which a lot of people were apoplectic about, because Matt Hendricks is, I think it's fair to say, at least in the eyes of the analytical community, a very one-dimensional player. Doesn't really contribute much in five-on-five situations.
Well, they brought him in on a one-year deal that didn't cost a lot of money to play a fourth-line role.
Right.
So nobody's expecting Matt Hendricks to score 15 goals this year.
Right, but is the idea? But at least Matt Hendricks, for, you know, has an identifiable talent, and that's on the penalty kill. I'm not certain that Brandon Tanev has the same identifiable talent, particularly on the penalty kill where the Jets struggle so much. Tanev was part of the Jets' penalty kill last season, and we all know how that turned out, the bottom five penalty kill in the league. What has changed over the last, in the offseason, the last 4, 5, 6 months that make you think that Brandon Tanev is all of a sudden going to be the answer on your penalty kill, and it's worthwhile to keep Kyle Connor in the Manitoba Moose?
Well, you can just look at just development and the stages of a development as a hockey player. Bigger, stronger, faster, more sound along the walls, maybe less hesitant to whack at a puck as opposed to get his body in there and battle a guy out for positioning, and then he can maybe clear the puck along the wall. We saw it with Kyle Connor. He's quick, he's nifty along the wall, but he doesn't have that core strength to stabilize himself when he's battling against some of the bigger, more sound NHLers, especially when guys are on a power play and they're fighting to get that puck to the open man. It seems that They're looking for that guy that kind of, Rick loves the word Tasmanian devil, I love that term, but just a guy who will kind of just lay it all out there and get the puck out at anything it costs. Kyle Connor may hesitate to initiate those contacts right off the bat.
But you're not going to play him in that role where he would be vulnerable to those battles that you're talking about. You're not going to.
But he could take penalties in those situations.
Okay, fine. That he might start chasing the game a little bit. Fine. I suppose that's an argument that could be made. I just, from my perspective here, Ezzie, and I'll let you jump in real quick. You get final word on this. It seems like when you're not deploying your best players and you're not deploying your best lineup, you're handicapping your team unnecessarily, and that the penalty killing role that this team is, you know, so desperate to find, be it from Matt Hendricks, be it from Brandon Tanev, it seems like other players who are, you know, could fill that role while keeping Kyle Connor around at the same time.
Yeah, and that's a fair point, Drew. And I don't think, by the way, that Kyle Connor should feel down on himself at all that he's starting the season with the Manitoba Moose. This is a kid who's in his early 20s and oozes offensive potential is what I used to describe him on illegalcurve.com. And it still holds true. He didn't have the best preseason. If he scored two or three goals, I think we'd be having a different conversation. Kyle Connor would be on the opening night roster. But as I said earlier, guys, I think Kyle Connor is going to play significant time with the Jets this year. And in the meantime, he gets to play on the first or second line with the Manitoba Moose alongside Jack Roslovic. I don't think that's a bad thing, and I don't think that's necessarily going to handcuff the Jets that much earlier in the season. And if the Jets are struggling to get offense from those bottom two lines, the third line, the fourth line, I think Kyle Connor's probably, Drew, the first guy they're going to call up.
God help the Winnipeg Jets if they give up three power play goals tomorrow night against the Toronto Maple Leafs. The phone lines at this station and the chatter at this station will be off the hook.
Oh, it'll be great.
Until game number two on Saturday night in Calgary. When we come back, Jeff Hamilton of the Winnipeg Free Press joins us. We'll talk about the Jets roster as we continue with our 2017-18 NHL season preview live on TSN 1290. Tuesday evening here on TSN 1290, you're listening to the season premiere of NHL This Week. If you want to reach us in studio, you can do that via Twitter, at Legal Curve. That's where you can send us your comments, your insults, try and keep them Jets-related and not, you know, go after us in personal attacks. I don't think that's too much to ask. You can also message us in studio via text. You can send your messages to 1290.90. Standard messaging rates do apply. And of course, if you're looking for the latest in Winnipeg Jets news and audio, that's available at illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Thrilled to welcome back to the program our very good friend from the Winnipeg Free Press. His name is Jeff Hamilton. Jeffrey, good evening. Thanks very much for doing this.
Gentlemen, how are we doing?
We're doing very well. How about yourself, Jeff?
Pretty good. I had a couple insults in the shotgun for you guys, but I guess I'll edit those. They were all personal. So
well, you know, you can
get rid of those ones.
Yeah, you know, if they come from you, I suppose they you know, they might be more buddies making fun of us. But you know,
absolutely.
it's when they're random people on Twitter and they start talking about, you know, my hairline or things like that. It gets a little hurtful at that point in time.
Okay, fair enough. We'll keep it cool this time around.
There you go. You're nothing if not a gentleman. Jeff, obviously we bring you on to talk about the final Winnipeg Jets roster and preview the season as part of our season preview show here on TSN 1290. We start with what has the city in an uproar, the perceived decision to go with Brandon Tanev over Kyle Connor. Is that too simplistic to just say that, you know, Brandon Tanev won the spot over Kyle Connor this exhibition season?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, those are two guys that are two very different players. And, you know, I can understand the frustration with the fan base on, you know, wanting a guy who you know, lit up the college at University of Michigan. And, you know, and when you watch those highlights, you just think that guy's going to jump right into the NHL and be able to produce. I mean, clearly last season he struggled. He did make the opening roster, but, you know, only managed to play 20 games with the club. But, yeah, I think it's unfair to say that Brandon Tanev, you know, took the job from Kyle Connor. Granted, you know, obviously he has one of the 23 roster spots, so there is an argument, I guess, to be made there. But I think it's just two guys, you know, trying to fill two completely different roles. And, you know, Kyle Connor is an interesting case because I think he had every chance in the world in the preseason to kind of show that he was, you know, ready for that step. And although I think you saw some flashes there, you know, I think that his overall defensive game clearly needs some work. He seemed to be almost kind of a deer caught in the headlights a couple times that proved costly. And the last thing you want to be doing is noticed for the wrong reasons. Now, I mean, obviously, you could look at Brandon Tanev and say, you know, the guy's a water beetle on the ice, but what role does he really fit? Is he a penalty killer? He's certainly not, you know, you're not going to get a ton of goals from him in offensive production. And Kyle Connor is just not going to play on the fourth line. I mean, he deserves big minutes wherever he is, and he's going to get that with the Moose. And, you know, with this, just how many injuries this team gets, you know, I don't think it'll be long before you see Kyle Connor up playing, you know, in the NHL level. But at this point, I can understand the argument and the relationship the fans have with Kyle Connor over Brandon Tanev, but it's just at this point simply who fits that best role on the fourth line, and I think that goes to Tanev.
Jeff, we know that the goaltending and goals against have to be better this year, and we know that Steve Mason was brought in to be the number one goaltender, so we know that there is a lot riding on Steve Mason's performance. But when you look at the Jets' top six defensemen, how important is Tyler Myers' health going to be to the way the Jets improve on the defensive side of the puck?
Yeah, it's funny you ask that, Ez, because I was looking at the lineup just before you guys called, and I figured you were going to maybe ask me my impression of the team and where the question marks were. And there's so many questions in the bottom six for forwards that I think people tend to, you know, forget just how many. I don't want to call them question marks just because it's a negative connotation, but how many you know, what-ifs on this defense? I mean, Tyler Myers played 11 games last year. I mean, his last regular season game was November 11th. Dmitry Kulikov, I mean, he's slated to be his partner right now. He just inked a 3-year deal with the Jets, obviously, in the offseason, coming after a pretty dismal year last year where he was also injury-riddled. And I thought Tucker Poolman played, you know, obviously had a better training camp than him, but I understand why the Jets go with a guy that they're paying so much money and not a 24-year-old rookie who still needs to kind of get accustomed to the NHL to a certain degree. Then you have Toby Enstrom. I mean, we all know his injury history, and just right there, I mean, you have half of a defense that a lot of pundits around this league are calling, you know, up there to being one of the best in the NHL, and yet have so many question marks on the health side. So I would say, you know, whether it's Tyler Myers' health or Toby Enstrom or Dmitry Kulikov or Dustin Byfuglien, who, you know, has been known to, you know, miss a few games due to injury, you know, there's... You know, health is going to be a huge issue, and if there's any silver lining to it, it's that Tucker Poolman's kind of, you know, waiting in the wind a little bit until one of those happens. So with Tyler Myers, I just, you know, I wouldn't make it all about him and whether or not he's kind of healthy to go. I would say there's a couple guys in there that make it an intriguing group just based on, you know, how much hockey's been missed over the last year and a bit.
Yeah, Jeff, you touched on Tucker Poolman. I kind of want to go a little bit forward with him. I'm just curious what you think about where he's situated this year. And is he better off as the seventh D-man with this team? Or do you think he's better served playing heavy minutes as a top or second pairing in the A with the Moose?
So I would say twofold. I agree with both. And in the sense that right now, I think it's okay that he starts with the Jets. I mean, he had a good training camp. You know, he is coming off shoulder surgeries. Not saying that's affected him any by any stretch, but I think let him stay with the Jets for a little bit because, I mean, an injury could happen. Let him be up with the big club. I think that's a little bit of a reward, even though it sounds ridiculous that it's a reward when he's probably not going to be logging any minutes. But he's got plenty of time to join the Manitoba. So I say keep him up here a little bit, see what happens. But if it's going to be whether he sits in the press box, versus playing, you know, top line minutes, top pairing minutes with the Moose. I mean, clearly he belongs at the AHL level. And you know, there's an argument there, you know, him being 24 years old, that, you know, he's not that, you know, young 18, 19 year old defenseman that, you know, he has a ton of smarts and can play both sides, which is impressive. But, you know, he also has to get used to the NHL grind. And you know, you talk to rookies, whether they're 18, 19 to, you know, late 20s that are in their first year in the NHL, and they always talk about how tough it is and how tough the, you know, just getting used to the game and how the number of games and the road trips and all that stuff. I mean, he was playing college. He wasn't playing, you know, in the WHL or CHL. I mean, he's not used to that many games. So at this point, I think although he definitely deserved a spot, I think he was, you know, fits in the top six on this team as far as what he's been able to do the last couple of weeks. It's only going to bode well to log big minutes. And right now, before an injury happens, I think that's going to be with the Moose and probably where he belongs.
Jeff Hamilton, our guest on NHL This Week, discussing the Winnipeg Jets opening night roster. Jeff, it was, I believe, last week that head coach Paul Maurice spoke about needing or wanting 40 goals out of the Jets' third line this season, that's sort of the number he would have pegged for the three players who make up the third line. Do the Jets have the 40 goals from their third line when you look at the currently constructed lineup?
No. I mean, I don't think so in the regard, like, could they end up with 40 goals total? Are you
total,
Adam
total.
Lowry? I know, is Adam Lowry going to be on the power play? Does that account for, you know, the third line's production, or does he actually want 40 goals from a group that, you know, currently consists of Andrew Kopp, Adam Lowry, and Joel Armia? Am I saying it's impossible? No. But I mean, think about it. It would look like a 15-15-10. That's actually not, you know, when you look at it that way, that seems like that's what you should have. So, maybe they do hit 40. To me, it's interesting because it'll be determined on how Adam Lowry can drive that line. And to me, I think that's why Nick Satanzal on that third line is because the Jets seem to have more confidence in a guy like Adam Lowry, who's, you know, obviously more experienced at this level, but obviously isn't as offensively gifted. So, you know, what kind of chemistry those three can bring, and I mean, that's if you're using that line as the third line the whole year. But at the end of the day, you need to get production from your third line, whether it's 40 goals or plus. I just looking at that lineup right now, I'm not 100% convinced that will necessarily come on 5-on-5 just strictly with that group. But, you know, as we've seen in past years, it always seems to switch up and change. But maybe that is a good number for your third line. But whether or not you want to put a total on it or not, you need to get scoring from your third line. You need to get, you know, you need your fourth line chipping in, you know, every once in a while. So just the way it's constructed now, I don't think it's a bad trio necessarily. I just think, you know, I don't think it's going to be the one that maybe lasts all year long.
You know, Jeff, it's fascinating to me working in sports media as you do, and we've talked a lot about Kyle Connor and Tyler Myers, Steve Mason. It seems like not very many people are talking about Jacob Trouba. This time last year, that's all we were talking about was Jacob Trouba and how many years he was going to sign for. And, you know, he's coming off of a career year. He only played 60 games, but he had career highs in points and minutes played. And when you consider that he's in the last year of a two-year deal and it's unknown yet if he's going to sign long-term, should we be talking a little bit more about how important this year is going to be for Jacob Trouba?
Yeah, I mean, especially when you consider, as you mentioned, as just the kind of production he was able to do last year, he really emerged as a guy who might have been questionable as a top-line pairing to, you know, a guy who's clearly capable of taking that role just from that last season. And I mean, obviously we were talking a lot about Jacob Trouba last season at this point because he just wasn't here. So I mean, the idea of him, of what his season, you know, looks like, I think him and Josh Morrissey will, you know, it'd be interesting to see how they continue their chemistry together, because I think that was a group that, talking with Josh Morrissey earlier in this training camp, I mean, he was excited to play with Jacob Trouba, and they do have a built-in chemistry just from being, you know, not drafted too far from each other. They room together during training camps and you know, spend a lot of time and get along with one another. So it'll be interesting to see how that Jets number one pairing flourishes together. But, I mean, it's going to be the elephant in the room for as long as Jacob Trouba doesn't have a contract. I mean, there's a lot of questions out there on whether, you know, he wants to be in Winnipeg, what it would take to keep him here. You know, would it be a successful season be enough, or is he, you know, focused on kind of living in the States? You know, there's a lot of things about that have been rumored around, you know, his play. But, you know, it's not going to be talked about now. And it has been to a certain point, but it's just been ignored. And, you know, both sides will continue to say that they're not, you know, either they're not working on it or, you know, it continues to be a work in progress, whatever stage it's going to be. But, you know, it's going to be as soon as it gets to, you know, later this year or as the weeks go on and he's not inked to an extension, it's certainly going to be a hot topic. Not a lot of people's number one right kind of just fly under the wind without a contract for too long.
Jeff, today was the official warm-up NHL Jets 2017-18 over-under show, so I want to run a couple by you, just a select few, and we'll go rapid-fire style, and you can just go over-under if you don't mind.
Sure.
So let's start with a one Patrick Laine. Goals, 39.5.
I'm going to go over.
Over.
He's going to get the 40 goal, just based on this preseason. It's been crazy.
Ehlers, 68.5 points.
Whew. You can stay healthy, I'd say over.
Adam Lowry, 12.5 goals.
You know, depending on if you can get power play, I could see Adam Lowry chipping in probably over, yeah.
Nick Petan, 18.5 assists.
yeah, I think he'll probably get that many if he can play on the power play, so let's go with over.
And now, Tucker Poolman, NHL games played versus Sherratt, NHL games played. Who plays more games in the NHL this season?
Oh, hands down, Tucker Poolman. I mean, we've seen injuries to this back end for years. It's not going to be if he doesn't start with the Jets, it's not going to be long before we see him up here. And I'm sure he'll leapfrog a guy like Sherratt. They both might be playing a lot of games just based on how many injuries we've seen in the past.
Last one for you, Jeffrey, and we'll end the interview on this one. Over or under Winnipeg Jets playing 0.5 playoff games?
it's like a lose-lose situation. I just feel like looking at the group, I don't know if the Winnipeg Jets can get goaltending, that, you know, I would say above, but just the way it stands right now, I've just been given how tough the Central Division is. I hate to say it, but the odds are probably lower.
Jeff Hamilton of the Winnipeg Free Press joins us on the program. You'll hear him regularly on this station throughout the 2017-18 NHL season. Jeff, always appreciate your time, buddy.
Hey, guys, I should preface that, though, by saying, I've been wrong before. So here we are.
Don't worry. We all have been many, many times over. Jeff, thanks, buddy.
Take care, man.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we look at the Central Division. You're listening to the NHL This Week season premiere show on TSN 1290.
Hawks get out. Here's Panic looking for Osterley. Centered it. And did it go in? It did. Yes, the Blackhawks have scored again for the sixth time, and that's the hat trick for Brandon Saad. His first game back on United Center ice. He's got three.
What was once old is new again in Chicago as Brandon Saad returns to the Blackhawks as part of their off-season overhaul. The Blackhawks, last season, they won the Central Division, certainly a perennial Stanley Cup contender. But a lot of teams, a lot of prognosticators, a lot of pundits are speculating that the Blackhawks might fall all the way out of the Central Division playoffs. We'll talk about the Blackhawks, the Blues, and the Minnesota Wild this segment as part of the NHL season preview show here on TSN 1290. I should mention that this segment is brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. For more information, visit Linden Market Dental Center. com. Ezra Ginsberg, we started with the Chicago Blackhawks, as I mentioned, Central Division champions last year. Very active offseason. Brandon Saad comes in. Patrick Sharp, also an old name returning. They make the trade. They bring in Connor Murphy from the Arizona Coyotes and then some other players as well. They lose Nicholas Chalmerson. Marian Hossa retires. Artemi Panarin, I guess Hossa technically didn't retire. He's on long-term injured reserve. Artemi Panarin goes to Columbus for Saad. Trevor Van Riemsdyk, they lose him in the expansion draft. A lot of upheaval in the Blackhawks this year. To your mind, how does that affect them entering the season?
Yeah, and every single area was affected this offseason, guys. The goaltending, the Chicago Blackhawks losing Scott Darling to the Carolina Hurricanes. Anton Forsberg is going to back up Corey Crawford, who's won two Stanley Cups with the Blackhawks. When you look at this Blackhawks roster, Sean, there's absolutely no doubt that the Blackhawks aren't as good as they were last year. And I'm more so worried about Marian Hossa not being on this roster as opposed to Artemi Panarin. Now, Artemi Panarin has been top 10 in the NHL in scoring the last 2 years. And when you're talking about losing that offense, well, Brandon Saad adds a different element, a bit more of a gritty player, has that familiarity with Jonathan Toews. He's going to start the season on the top line with Jonathan Toews and Richard Panik. But when you talk about the core of this team, so you're talking about Kane, Toews, Duncan Keith, Corey Crawford, Brent Seabrook. I mean, the core of this team that has won three Stanley Cups is still there. Now, I don't know if they're going to repeat Central Division champions with 109 points, but I'm not buying that narrative that the Chicago Blackhawks aren't a playoff team. I still have them as a playoff team, and I realize the special teams for them struggled, especially the penalty kill was not good last year, but they're still a decent possession team. They're still led by one of the best offensive players in the league in Patrick Kane. Patrick Sharp, I think, is going to replace some of Marian Hossa's offense, Sean, but there's no doubt that other teams in the Central Division have caught up to the Blackhawks.
Oh, absolutely, and just like I'm just looking at their roster right now, and You nailed it, Ezzy. They have lost significant players on every aspect of their roster, minus goaltending. But even so, the backup, Scott Darling, gone. So,
And he was a contributor to the Blackhawks, and they brought in, as their backup goaltender, is going to be Anton Forsberg, right, ex of the Columbus Blue Jackets.
Right, but you remember what Scott Darling did in the postseason, I believe it was 2 years ago. He was unstoppable for that first round.
Against Nashville.
Against Nashville, yeah.
Nashville almost won that series.
Mm-hmm. a couple seasons ago.
Yeah, and so when you're talking about, you know, how big of a drop-off it's going to be, well, we have no idea. We haven't even, you know, begun the season yet. But when you're talking about, you know, the Minnesota Wild, the Nashville Predators, who went all the way to the Stanley Cup Final, I mean, there's a good chance, guys, that another team wins the Central Division. I mean, some people are picking the Winnipeg Jets to win the Central Division, and, you know, that might seem a little bit far-fetched, but the reality is this division is so tight. And Dallas, we haven't even mentioned. We're going to get to them later, Drew, but I mean, the same teams aren't going to make the playoffs that made it last year out of the Central. I mean, that's guaranteed. We know that most likely one of Winnipeg or Dallas or both of those two teams are going to make the playoffs this year, just when you base it on the moves that they've made. So, I mean, Chicago's lost some offense, and that defense, guys, is just not as good as it was in 2013, 2015 when they won their last Stanley Cups, right? Mm-hmm. So you're talking about Duncan Keith and Brent Seabrook being there, but aside from that, four of the top six defensemen in that group are different. So you're expecting a lot out of Gustav Forsling, who's going to be paired up with Brent Seabrook. You're expecting a lot out of Michael Kempney, Jan Ruta. Jan Ruta is from the Czech Republic. He's never played an NHL game. He's a young defenseman. You have Cody Franz in there, you know, so you know that he can step in on that third pair.
Connor Murphy was the guy they acquired from the Coyotes for Chalmerson,
right.
So
and
they're
he's
expecting
a solid,
lot from him.
He's a good, solid, you know, physical defenseman, Drew. He's got good size, but he's not Nicklas Hjalmarsson. I mean, Nicklas Hjalmarsson is a really good defenseman. So when you're talking about this Blackhawks roster, in my opinion, I still think they're a playoff team, but I don't think that they win the division.
And we'll give our playoff predictions at the end of each conference, so you can stay tuned to that throughout the course of the show. The team that finished in second place in the Central Division last year, unfortunately for them, a disappointing first-round playoff exit. That was the Minnesota Wild. They were 49-25-8 last year for 106 points. Their big additions this offseason, it came in a trade with the Buffalo Sabres. They bring in Tyler Ennis and Marcus Foligno. Matt Cullen comes in to add some real depth there at the bottom of the roster. Kyle Quincy and Ryan Murphy on the back end. Their loss is Marco Scandella is the big name. He goes off of their defense. Jason Pominville goes back to Buffalo after having played so many years there before. And then Martin Hanzel, who was a guy that they acquired at the trade deadline, that certainly didn't work out. Darcy Kemper is out as the backup goaltender as well. Minnesota Wild are an interesting team. You know, I think that they're going to be good in the regular season just because Bruce Boudreau's teams are always good in the regular season. It would be surprising if they had a dramatic drop-off, and they've sort of had a changing of the guard in terms of who their core players are, especially up front. Since it's not Zach Parise's team and hasn't been for a while now, we know how good guys like Nino Niederreiter were last year.
Yeah, and Parise is going to start the season injured, Drew.
Yes, back
and,
injury.
You know, he's had a lot of injury problems over the years. And I think you're a fool if you pick the Minnesota Wild to miss the playoffs, because that's what the Minnesota Wild do. They make the playoffs every year. It's still, I think, one of the best top sixes in the NHL, top five. I'd say Nashville is for sure number one, especially with Ryan Ellis, but he's injured for the first 2 months. But when you're talking Ryan Suter, Jared Spurgeon, Matt Dumba, Jonas Brodin, the third pair is Mike Riley and Kyle Quincy. Yeah. I have no problem with that group of defensemen. We know Devan Dubnyk is still one of the best goalies in the NHL. Alex Stalock is a more than capable backup goaltender, replacing, as you mentioned, Darcy Kemper. But I look at this team, Drew, and to me, it's still going to be a team that competes for the division lead. And I think that the Chicago Blackhawks have taken a step back, and when I look at the Wild, I don't think that they've necessarily taken a step back or a step forward. I think that they're still that well-oiled machine, Sean, that we're used to, right? So, sure, you know, you move Jason Pominville and Scandella. That basically cut some costs there because Pominville was making, whatever, $20 million a year or whatever he was making. It was, I think, five. But, you know, that move, it was actually a pretty good deal for the Wild. Tyler Ennis is a pretty underrated player. He's a guy that can contribute some offense, whether that's on the third line or the second line. This is a team that's good offensively and good defensively. And the reality is the reason why they took that step forward last year is it was because of those mid-20s players that took a step forward. Mikael Granlund, Nito Niederreiter, Charlie Coyle had a good year. Jason Zucker. They're expecting Eric Staal to have a repeat performance from his 60-plus point season from last year, right? So a guy like Joel Eriksson Ek is going to get a little bit more playing time. The Minnesota Wild have gotten a little bit younger, but it's still a team that is based on being strong in net and on defense, and I don't see them finishing any lower than second in the Central.
You also touched on head coach Bruce Boudreau, who exudes structure. That's one thing that Bruce Boudreau, that regular season, his teams are structured, and they will follow his formula to a T. And when I'm just staring at the roster right now, it screams out stability down the middle to me. Eric Staal, Miku Koivu, Joel Eriksson-Ek, and then Matt Cullen adding some fabulous experience down the middle there. Mm-hmm. And then you supporting cast, Tyler Ennis. We're not sure if Daniel Winnick will stay on with the team or not, but
He's in the lineup as a PTO, or he's in training camp on a PTO.
They did actually release him today.
They did release him? Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I thought I saw that. But so you just look at the Wild, and yeah, they're fast. They're big and strong. They can score. They're opportunistic. It doesn't take them very, very long to score on goals. You look at that goal Jared Spurgeon scored against the Jets in the preseason. Just it all takes. Quick snapshot, goal. They're very opportunistic. And they're definitely not making the playoffs.
Double negative there. Third place in the Central Division last year, went to the St. Louis Blues. Bit of an up and down season. They replaced the coach. That was Ken Hitchcock. They had a goaltending issue, and then Jake Allen bounced back, and they made it all the way to the second round. They finished 46-29-7, 99 points. Their big offseason addition was Braden Schenn coming over from the Philadelphia Flyers in a trade. Yuri Laterra goes to Philadelphia. Ryan Reeves goes to Pittsburgh in a trade. But this is a team that has been hit by the injury bug already. Robbie Fabry, who was set to be a key component to their team, he's lost for the season. Alex Steen is out to start the year, and Jay Bouwmeester is out to start the season. What do you make of the St. Louis Blues with all these injuries? Can they overcome the adversity that they are feeling even before the first puck drop has occurred?
I don't know if they can, Drew. And, you know, if you're asking me, you know, which teams have taken a step back, for me, the St. Louis Blues have definitely taken a step back. And Robbie Fabry being out for the season, I mean, that's just unfortunate. He missed a lot of time last year as well. Jay Bouwmeester, he's most likely going to miss at least a couple of weeks to start the season. So Joel Edmondson's going to start off on the top pair with Alex Pietrangelo. But you've still got Carl Gunnarsson, Colton Parayko there, good solid defenseman. There's a rookie there who's going to play on the third pair, Vince Dunn, but we expect him to be back in the American Hockey League after Jay Bouwmeester comes, but still very solid in net. But again, Drew, where are the goals going to come from? Mm-hmm. Because the St. Louis Blues were a top 10 team in the NHL last year when it came to goals against, and that had a lot to do with the way Jake Allen played at the end of the year. But aside from Paul Stastny, Vladimir Tarasenko, Jaden Schwartz and Braden Schenn, who's scoring the goals, right? Alex Steen had a bad year last year. He's probably going to have a bounce back year. But again, he's injured to start the season. Exactly. He's injured to start the season and getting older. Paul Stastny, last year of his contract, he's a pending UFA. When you talk about the Blues, though, that really is what it's going to come down to. It's going to come down to that bottom third and fourth line. I don't think that it's as deep as it has been in previous years. And really, it's going to be, you know, is Jake Allen going to be able to duplicate, you know, the last 30 or 40 games from last year?
Right, because he was that bad for the first 30 or 40 games last year.
Well, they just won't bring him to Winnipeg if need be.
Yeah.
Just miss a Winnipeg trip and hits the reset button, right?
That's apparently all it takes sometimes. When we come back, we look at the rest of the Central Division. That's going to be the defending Western Conference champion Nashville Predators, the Dallas Stars, and the lamentable outfit that is called the Colorado Avalanche. That's coming up next. You're listening to NHL This Week. It's our season preview show on TSN 1290.
Here's a chance. Kraus right to the net. He stopped that time by Bishop. Getzlaf pulls it in. Save made by Bishop. Doan shoots up high. Stopped that time. Here's a chance shorthanded. And it's stopped that time by Bishop. Back round. Stopped by Bishop.
Been one of the most active guys so far. Very concise and precise moves.
Then Bishop signed a big deal with the Dallas Stars. A six-year deal worth $29.5 million.
Can Ben Bishop solve the goaltending woes of the Dallas Stars? They're counting on him, and thus a return to the playoffs. That's the off-season big move in the Lone Star State with the Dallas Stars. Welcome back to the program. This segment brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. We start or continue in the Central Division with the defending Western Conference champion, the Nashville Predators, a relatively quiet offseason. Nick Bonino comes in from Pittsburgh. He'll be their third-line center. Alexei Yemelin comes in initially as a depth defenseman. He's going to play a much bigger role now with Ryan Ellis out of the lineup for the next few months. James Neal goes to Vegas in the expansion draft. Colin Wilson goes to Colorado as part of a trade. Mike Fisher retires. Nashville Predators were one of the wild card teams last season. They made it all the way to the Stanley Cup Finals. What do you foresee for the Predators this year, Mr. Ginsburg?
Drew, go ahead and pencil in the Nashville Predators as a playoff team right now. And even though they might have taken a little bit of a step back and they might have got a little bit weaker, you mentioned Nick Bonino. They've actually got him as the second-line center right now. I agree with you. He's better suited to be a third-line center. You've also got Kelly Yarncroak there, who I think might be elevated to a second-line role. But when you're talking about the Predators, obviously not having Ryan Ellis for the first couple of months of the season, it might be 3 months that he's out of the lineup, that's going to hurt you. But we know that there are other players that can step up into the lineup. When you're talking about that top pair, it looks like it's going to be Roman Josi and Matt Irwin, Matthias Ekholm and PK Subban. That's your second pair. Then you're going to have Alexei Emelin and Yannick Weber on your third pair. But the reality is, guys, those are still six very good NHL defensemen with a lot of experience. Obviously, Ryan Ellis slots in your top four there when he comes back. But this team is not going to lose a lot from last year. And obviously, Mike Fisher, you know, was a really good player. He was the captain of the team. But there are other players in this lineup that are going to contribute. Scott Hartnell, I thought, was a really good pickup. Kevin Fiala is a guy that's only had a taste of the NHL. He's going to start the season on the second line.
Coming back from the broken leg last year.
Right.
In the playoffs.
So, I mean, this team, Sean, has a lot of talent. And I don't see them finishing any worse than second or third in the Central. They might win it.
Yeah, I'm just looking at their roster, and you might as well put the pencil away and get the pen out.
Yeah,
they're getting into the postseason. You're just looking at the players that they have. You assume Philip Forsberg is going to take another step in his development. No, obviously not a young guy, but still an improving player. The guy's got one of the best shots in the league. Playing up against alongside Ryan Johansson, a dominant two-way center, which is the most important thing you can have other than a solid goaltender. And then it's going to be really interesting to see what Victor Arvidsson can do as a repeat this year. He scored 30-plus last year, and you know, an undersized, skilled forward, going to play top line, top power play minutes, and really intrigued. And you mentioned Kevin Fiala. He's been – reports out of Nashville is that he's looked very impressive this preseason.
Yeah, so he was taking a few spots after Nikolai Ehlers in the 2014 draft. And, you know, Sean makes a really good point. I mean, Ryan Johansson, Drew, we know he's the number one center that they've been really
seeking. Remember
how valuable
when he went down in the playoffs?
Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, they really didn't have a chance in the Stanley Cup Final without Ryan Johansson. I really think it would be a different series, because then you had Colton Sisson, who was essentially your second-line center. Yeah. But when you're talking about Victor Arvidsson, who Sean mentioned had 30 goals last year, Philip Forsberg on the left wing there, they had almost 200 combined points last year. I think they were around 180. I'd have to look it up. But, I mean, this is a bona fide top line. It might be a top five first line in the NHL. I just don't see this team taking that much of a step back. Maybe they go down 2 or 3 points and then they struggle without Ryan Ellis early on in the season. But I just don't see them not being in the playoffs this year.
As we mentioned, in Dallas, Ben Bishop was one of their big offseason acquisitions. There were a few of them. He's going to come in to shore up the goaltending graveyard that has been the situation in Dallas. Martin Hanzel comes in as a centerman. Alex Radulov comes in from the Montreal Canadiens. And Mark Mathot, who was taken by Vegas in the expansion draft and then traded to Dallas. Outgoing Cody Eakin, Alex Hemsky, Yuri Hudler, Antti Niemi, and Patrick Sharp. Is Ben Bishop enough to change the fortunes of the Dallas Stars and put them back into the playoffs? Haven't even mentioned two guys named Jamie Benn and Tyler Seguin.
Yeah, and Tyler Seguin and Jamie Benn had down years last year for the Dallas Stars. Really, everybody had down years for the Dallas Stars last year.
And new head coach there as well, new old head coach Ken Hitchcock.
Right, and you can't not talk about the Dallas Stars without mentioning Ken Hitchcock, Drew. And, you know, I mean, we know that Ken Hitchcock has the Stanley Cup from back in 1999 with the Dallas Stars. He's obviously trying to repeat that success, but really it starts in goal. Ben Bishop, we know he's gone to the Stanley Cup Final. He's an upgrade over Antti Niemi and Kari Lehtinen. They were the two worst goalies combined in the NHL last year, so we know you can only go up. But really, you're talking about the other additions that they've made. That defense was not good enough, so they brought in Mark Mathot, a veteran who was a top-pairing defenseman for Ottawa for a few years there. And then you bring in Alex Radulov, who's going to start the year on the top line with Sagan and Ben. And guys, when you're talking about dangerous first line, I mean, goalies, I think, are going to be crapping their pants when they see those three players coming at them. And, I mean, there's a lot of depth throughout the lineup. Martin Hansel, you know, gives you another center, most likely going to center that third line.
Is there enough depth scoring in the forwards, though? I mean, besides that, you load up the top line, and Jason Spezza certainly isn't what he once was, but he can score. After that, is there enough offense in the Dallas Stars forward group to really do damage?
It's a good question, and you know, you're gonna miss Patrick Sharp, you're gonna miss Alex Hemsky, even though those guys didn't have great years. But you're talking about asking for a lot from a guy like Radek Faksa. Mm-hmm. Martin Hansel is going to be on that third line. Tyler Pitlick is lined up on that third line. Most likely you want him being a fourth line, but your Antoine Roussel, Devon Shore, these are guys in your bottom six. But you've also got a lot of talent offensively there. John Klingberg's a guy that I think could get back to, you know, 55, 60 points this year. He's a top 10 offensive defenseman. And you got to remember too, Drew, even though the Dallas Stars were horrible last year, they were still a very good possession team. And if it wasn't for really poor goaltending, and they should have been a playoff team. I think I picked them to win the cup last year. Let's not talk about that. But when you're talking about the improvement...
You should stop making predictions.
Well, when you talk about the improvements that they made in goal and on defense, bringing in a guy like Alex Radulov, if Tyler Seguin, Jamie Benn, and Alex Radulov combine for 200 or more points, I don't think it matters if anybody's scoring on the third or fourth lines.
Shawnee?
I think it matters if Ben Bishop can stay healthy, however. I think that is a huge question mark going into this season, is if Ben Bishop can stay healthy and shoulder a load that the Dallas Stars need him to, because they are going to be giving up scoring chances. Yes, they are offensively powerful. Yes, they have some depth. Esa Lindell is a guy I'm looking forward to watching this season. It was real impressive watching him play the Jets last year, so we'll look to him. He's playing with John Klingberg on the left side, at least coming out of training camp. But I'm looking at the depth, and it's a lot of pressure on Ben Sagan and Alexander Radulov, because Jason Spezza, another guy who battles injury bug, mm-hmm. if he goes down, that means Martin Hansel is your second-line center, a slowing, aging, big guy. But it's all speed, speed, speed now. And can anyone emulate, like, can anyone replicate the speed that Tyler Seguin is going to bring to line one? Probably not. Can they come close? That's the question.
The Colorado Avalanche were the last-place team in the Central Division last year. They were the last-place team in the entire NHL. They were one of the worst teams in recent history last year in the NHL. 48 points, a record of 22-56-4. Didn't do a lot this offseason. I mentioned Colin Wilson. He comes over from Nashville. Jonathan Bernier is going to be your backup goaltender behind Semyon Varlamov. Niall Yakupov, another team, is going to try and make a reclamation out of the former first overall pick. The Colorado Avalanche, do they have a hope in hell of making the playoffs this year, Ezra?
No, they don't. And, you know, you mentioned that they were the worst team. And when you're talking about goals for, they were worst in goals for. They were bottom five in goals against. The special teams were not very good. I mean, I just don't know if they're going to get that many more points than 48 points. I think maybe, what are we talking about? Maybe a 55 or 60-point team at best in that Central Division. The only thing that's certain in Colorado is that they've officially declared this a rebuild. So you're going to see young guys like Tyson Jost in the lineup, JT Compher. I mean, they have Mikko Rantanen in the lineup. He's going to be on the top line with Nathan MacKinnon. I mean, this just isn't a very good team. They haven't got better in goal. Semyon Varlamov isn't the same goalie that he was 4 or 5 years ago. This defense just, I mean, is there any question this is the worst defense in the NHL? I like Eric Johnson. Nikita Zadorov, I think it still remains to be seen if he's going to live up to being a first-round pick. Mark Barberio, Chris Bigras, he's a rookie. It's just not a very good team, so I think they finished last in the Central and probably last in the West.
We haven't even discussed the cloud that is hanging over this team right now, that is their top-line center, an elite player in the league who wants out and hasn't been granted that for how many months now?
Oh, years at this point in time.
Yeah, like, and oh, who's he centering? Alexander Kerfoot and Niall Yakupov. So as soon as I saw Big Nail up on the top line, I threw the pencil in the garbage, and they're out.
The Colorado Avalanche. Not a lot of hope from the Colorado Avalanche this year. When we return, Eric DeHatchik of The Athletic is going to join us. We'll focus on the Western Conference with him. Previews on the Pacific Division still to come and the entire Eastern Conference. Hour number two of the NHL This Week season preview show starts next on TSN 1290. Hour number two of the NHL season preview show continues on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Sean Asor with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website. It's got the latest Winnipeg Jets news. That's IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From theathletic.com, he's our very good friend, and truly the NHL season cannot begin until he's on our season preview show. Eric Dehatchik, welcome back to the program.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be here. I just arrived in Edmonton, actually, 5 minutes ago, so the timing is good.
Wonderful. We're always thrilled you're able to make time for us, Eric, and I appreciate it very much. And like we do each and every year with you, we're going to focus on the Western Conference with you, and we'll start with our hometown Winnipeg Jets. You were in town just last week, you know, doing a number of different stories on the Jets for your work at theathletic.com. What was your takeaway from this Winnipeg Jets team when you were spent some time around them and you watched them skate as part of training camp? You know, this team here in Winnipeg, we're desperate for playoff hockey at this point in time. Did you get the same sense of desperation from around the team as the fan base feels?
Well, I guess yes and no is the answer, you know, because desperation is one of those words that sounds kind of desperate, you know, and I don't think that it sums up the view of the team. I think there's confidence, you know. I think, you know, people in Winnipeg know and understand that they are the one team in the National Hockey League, although Toronto's doing a little bit of it right now, that sort of articulated a plan and then stuck to the plan. And so 2 years ago when they made the playoffs, they deliberately went backwards because they put young players in the lineup. And even last year, they lived with some growing pains. And, you know, there were some issues in goal, too. But there was a plan. And I think, you know, most people that in the hockey industry recognize the plan. It is hard to stick to the plan because the problem with the plan is that everything sounds great when we're talking now or in the summer. But the minute you start playing games, you want to jettison the plan. You want to throw out the plan. You want to fast track through the plan. And generally when teams do that, they end up making too many mistakes. I think about Toronto, you know, a team that, you know, often tried to fast track development. It didn't work. Brendan Shanahan came in and said, okay, we are going to do things the right way. We're going to go, you know, slow and steady. And you know, now they're at the point where they've got a very good, exciting team. Edmonton has a really good, exciting team. I like the pieces that Winnipeg's got. I liked them last year, too. But those pieces are all 12 months more mature. They're all ready to play in the National Hockey League. So, you know, when I look at the team on paper, I see they've made an upgrade in goal because they now have Steve Mason there, who's a guy that he's a competent NHL goaltender. Let's not overstate it. You know, it's been fine Carey Price, but they have somebody that can play minutes and I think give them a greater level of consistency than they got from Michael Hutchinson last year. I think Tyler Myers coming back is really critical. I mean, the right side of their defense is absolutely bulletproof. The left side, you know, not bad, but there are other teams that have better left sides. But collectively, 1-6, that's a really impressive group if they can all stay healthy. And then up front, there's very few teams that can boast the firepower of the top five Winnipeg forwards. And I would throw Perreault in there, too, as a number six. So, again, on paper, great. You know, young players getting better, great. You know, how long does it take for it all to come together? Hard to say. But I really do believe that after 2 years of patient investment, that this is the year that they do take a great leap forward. You know, last year, Edmonton was a last-place team. Everybody knew McDavid and Draisaitl coming, they were going to be better. But very few people had them in the playoffs, and then they exploded. They were really good, and now, you know, some of those betting sites have them as the second choice to win the Stanley Cup. So it can happen fast when you have the right pieces in place. I'm very interested to see what happens when the season begins, and I think the fact that the Leafs are in town for the opener, that's a really good test because the Leafs are almost the Eastern Conference mirror image of the Jets. You know, if you look down Winnipeg's lineup and then you can pretty much find an equivalent in Toronto in terms of you know, an equivalency. And I would say that, you know, Winnipeg's defense for sure is better than Toronto. So let's see if you know, this careful planning translates into the ice. I think that it will.
Eric, Chicago won the Central Division last year with 109 points. I think you'd agree that the Chicago Blackhawks aren't as good of a team as they were last year. But do you think their demise has been exaggerated?
Well, to the extent that I think there are people that believe that they could miss the playoffs. I think it's a long shot that they miss the playoffs, although, Los Angeles has fallen on hard times and for about 5 years there, it was Los Angeles and Chicago that were the class of the Western Conference. I think that and lots of people believe this too, but when they traded Nicholas Chalmerson, that puzzled me a little bit because I just thought he's such one of those really quietly effective players that coaches love. And so I think that they have weakened themselves on the blue line far more than they probably needed to. I get, his age. I get, that they're trying to refresh the lineup a bit. I mean, I get all those things. But they still do have, players that have won before, Taves and Kane and the two defensemen, Seabrook and Keith. So, I mean, they are still better than a win one, lose one team. I mean, to me, the teams that you would be concerned about in the Central Division are the ones that have gone backwards and fall into that pattern where they just win one game and lose a game. Because in today's NHL, that generally is not enough to get you into the playoffs. I still think they're good enough to be a playoff team. I think some of the pressure is going to be off of them, and I'm very interested to see how they react to that. Because one thing, when you carry the burden that Chicago has the last number of years of being the favorite and expected to win, and they have flamed out in the last couple of years in the playoffs, that's hard. It's hard to play that way. It's a lot easier to play when there's no pressure on you, when you just go out and play. And so I think that what you're going to do is see a lessening of the pressure on the Chicago Blackhawks this year, and I think that will translate into some performance results for them.
You're listening to NHL This Week. It's our season preview show, and we're discussing the Western Conference with Eric Tkachuk of TheAthletic.com.
Eric, I'm curious. I want to talk about a city where you just touched down in Edmonton with the Oilers, and just looking through their training camp, and you kind of expected the fourth overall big Finn, Jesse Puljujärvi, to kind of make more of an impact, and then here comes this youngster out of Spokane, Kaylor Yamamoto, who's kind of had an unbelievable preseason. And do you kind of see that Kaylor Yamamoto kind of pushed Jesse Puljujärvi down to the A with just his exceptional preseason?
Well, that's the way it looks right now, for sure. Obviously, I think they feel that Puljujärvi is a big-bodied guy that has taken a little bit more time than, say, Patrick Laine to acclimate. A lot of it, it has to do with off-ice adjustments. His English wasn't great when he first arrived. So I think he is finding his way. I think that they believe he's going to be like a real good NHL player at some point, but they think just in terms of the skill set and the style of hockey that he plays, he probably needs, I'm going to say, 20 games in the minors. I don't see him being down in the minors at Christmas. I don't see him being down in the minors for the entire year. I think they want to let this guy play another month or two in the minors and then bring him up on December 1st, or depending on whether there's injuries, or depending on, again, how the season unfolds. I think he will see some time in the NHL. I think that what they are trying to do with Yamamoto is reward him for really being a good player in their training camp. I think all smart teams do that. Calgary, and that's where I'm based, and they, for the most part, their players didn't have a very good training camp. There were only a couple of guys that really stood out. One was Tanner Glass, and the other was Mark Jankowski. So I'd be shocked if these guys weren't in the starting lineup. I think you have to do that. And so in the case of Yamamoto, I think what they want to do is see what happens 9 games into the season. He's a very slight guy. They project him as to do for Edmonton what Johnny Gaudreau does for hockey, a guy that can dart in and out of traffic and find the seams and score some goals. But we all know that there's a big difference between preseason hockey and even the last week of preseason hockey and when they drop the puck for real. So, some guys, don't miss a beat, and they pick up where they left off in the preseason in a way that you go, and then he's in the NHL. But I also think that they are being careful and cautious, because they also think that, a month in, it may well be that some of that training camp, bloom that they had has faded a little bit, and then that would give them the opportunity to send him back. But they want to look at him at the NHL level, and I think that's why Puljujärvi's in the minors right now.
Eric DeHatchick, our guest on NHL This Week. We're talking about the Western Conference as part of our season preview show. Eric, in Dallas, they had an active offseason, and the two biggest additions I would suggest are Ben Bishop in goal and Mark Methot on the blue line. No offense, of course, to Alex Radulov, who also joins the team up front. Are the additions of Bishop and Methot enough to get the Dallas Stars back into a playoff spot, given the struggles they had on the back end and in goal the last couple of years?
Yeah, I think so. But the one thing about it is that, you know, like, if you look at Ben Bishop's numbers a couple of years ago, like, he was a top National Hockey League goaltender, and then last year he had a very poor season. So I think there are some people that are asking themselves, you know, where is Ben Bishop right now? If last year was just an off year, if it was just, you know, his performance was affected by injury, and he can go back to being the guy that was so dominant for Tampa 2 years ago, then the puzzle solved in Dallas, because absolutely that was one team that had this glaring hole in goal, and it was exposed night in and night out. I mean, you know, you can just see the body language of a team when you a goalie gives up an early goal, and it's like, okay, it's early, we're going to get it back, and you 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 work so hard, and you get it even, and then 30 seconds later, another bad goal. It's just, and that kept happening again and again to Dallas last year, and so I think that they lost confidence in their goaltending there, and the management knew and understood that they had to make a change. So I think a lot of people are wondering what Ben Bishop is going to be like, and you know, if he's as good as he was 2 years ago, they're in the playoffs. If he's as bad as he was last year, then they're going to struggle, and it's probably logical to think he'll be somewhere in between. But he will be an upgrade on Antti Niemi for sure, and I think Methot does steady that defense group. I think they have a lot of talented young guys there, but I don't think you can play like five of those guys all at the same time. It's just it only works in Carolina for some reason. I don't know why it works there, but it seems to work there. It doesn't seem to work in too many other places in the National Hockey League. So Methot helps, and Radulov is interesting because, you know, when I mean, he is a guy that at times can be the most dynamic player on the ice. You know, there were times when I was watching Montreal last year, and your eye went to Radulov all the time, and he was so good. And then, of course, there are other times with Radulov that you have to check your program and like, is Radulov playing today? So, but that lack of consistency drives coaches crazy, and I'm just not sure how Ken Hitchcock is going to handle it if that is what he gets from Radulov. You know, the on switch one night and the off switch the other night, and it may well be that Hitch is a guy that can push the right buttons. You know, I mean, he had Tarasenko in St. Louis, and I think we know what the relationship there was like at the end. It was not great. So you know, is Radulov, will there be another type of I don't know how it's going to play out there, but I think that he, in the right frame of mind, this guy is immensely talented, and you can add a talent like that to your lineup that already has a Sagan and Ben there, and I think Jason Spezza still has a little bit left in the tank. That's a pretty good team.
Eric, we all know what the Nashville Predators did last year, going all the way to the Stanley Cup Final, almost winning the Stanley Cup. But how hard is it going to be to repeat that? And how concerned are you about the Nashville Predators up the middle?
Well, I think it'll be very hard to repeat it. I think they were a team that barely squeaked into the playoffs. You know, as someone in Winnipeg pointed out to me, they won 41 regular season games and the Jets won 40. So not a big gap there. And I think they got the most out of the group that they had in the playoffs. That happens. I mean, we've seen that happen to Edmonton in 2006, to Calgary in 2004, where you just happen to catch lightning in a bottle at the right time. And, you know, at the point where you need your Colton Sissons to have, you know, great games, they do. So I think that they have a good team, but I don't think they have a great team. I think they had a good team that overachieved in the playoffs last year. And they're touch and go to make the playoffs. I think that they would even acknowledge that themselves, that they don't have, they're not so deep at all those different positions. And of course, they'll be without Ryan Ellis for the start of the season, that they can automatically assume that they are going to be in the playoffs. I mean, I see people picking Nashville to get to the final again. I don't see it myself. I think they're a decent team in a conference that has, you know, six or seven decent teams. So for them to catch lightning in a bottle twice, that would really be something. I'm not saying it couldn't happen. I just don't expect that it will.
Eric, you talked about the Flames previously, and you're based out of Calgary, so I got to ask you, do you expect to see an increase in mullets around Calgary and number 68 jerseys, and what's the feel and excitement level around Cowtown with presumably big number 68 joining the roster?
Yeah. Well, he's coming. They have to do the paperwork and get the immigration matters done. He certainly won't be in the lineup on Wednesday against Edmonton. I think it'd be a reach to see him in the lineup Saturday when they play at home against Winnipeg. It's more likely it'll be sometime next week. I mean, the excitement level, I'll separate it into the excitement level around the team or internally in the team and around town. Around town, people are crazy about it. They understand. You know, people in Canada are sophisticated enough hockey fans to understand that this guy has been a great player for a long time. And he has a chance this year, if he stays healthy, to pass Gordie Howe as the all-time leading games played player. That is a significant, important milestone. And I think that, you know, people understand that he carries himself. He has that sort of Eminence Grease personality. I've been sort of at his locker stall because he set so many different milestones in the last few years, and he's willing to to go on and on about the philosophy of hockey and how he's rediscovered his love for the game. I think he's he's one of the greatest players of all time. You could argue top five for sure. So I think the town is very excited, and the players are too. Sam Bennett, it looks as if he's going to play protected minutes in Calgary. In other words, 5-on-5, I'm gonna surmise it'll be Sam Bennett, Chris Versteeg, and Jager that play together. They're going to leave Ferland on the line with Gaudreau and Monahan for now, with the idea that they could flip those two guys at different times. And I'm pretty sure that you will eventually see him on the first power play. But if you can get him away from the top defense pairs and allow him to create room for Sam Bennett. I mean, the Flames have been waiting for Bennett to come along, but they haven't done him any favors either, because they want him to play center, and it's a hard position for a young player to learn, and they haven't given him great line mates. And one of the reasons that he took a very moderate contract this summer coming out of entry level was that he hasn't put the points up. Well, I think playing 5-on-5 with Jager, that will open up the ice for him. And I see his production increasing because of the relationship there. And he was, just giddy, like, oh, Jager, cool, And, so many of these players, I think Jager had 6 years under his belt before Bennett was born. So, they understand who he is and they know what he means. And they're very excited to have him on their team.
Eric, we could do this all night with you, but I suspect you might want to, settle in as you just got to Edmonton 5 minutes before the interview. So we'll let you go with this last question. It's the standard last question that we ask you each and every year. Your Stanley Cup, who you think is going to represent each of the conferences in the Stanley Cup final, and then ultimately who you think is going to be hoisting Lord Stanley's Grail next June, I guess.
Yeah, and I'll give you the standard preface that I give you every year, which is that if I could see the lineups of the teams going into the playoffs today, I feel a lot more confident in making a pick because, so much changes over the course of a season. I mean, I don't even remember who I picked last year, but I can tell you a lot of people picked Dallas and Tampa to get to the finals last year, and those teams didn't even make the playoffs. Injuries ruined them. I mean, I don't have a crystal ball that can foresee an injury to Steven Stamkos, but if you want me to throw two names at you, I'll pick Pittsburgh again just because it hasn't been done since the Islanders in the early 80s, where the team has won at 3. Of course, the Islanders won 4. I think Pittsburgh is better, frankly, and a lot depends, too, on the health of Murray, the goaltender. Last year, they were very, very lucky that they still had Fleury there to spell him because of the various injuries that Murray had, and I'm not sure that Niemi can come in and do the same thing. But if he's healthy, this guy just has the right personality as a young goaltender. He just wins, and he doesn't let anything fluster him. And then, two, Chris Letang. I mean, they went all the way last year without Letang. And this guy, to me, is a tremendous player. And if he's healthy and he's refreshed, I think that he will give them a jolt of adrenaline. And Crosby just competes and competes and competes. And I love Malkin, too. So, they've got good pieces there. And I don't really see anybody else that is prepared to knock them out if they have all hands on deck when they start the playoffs. The West is really tricky because I can imagine a scenario where Edmonton is there. I can imagine a scenario where Anaheim is there. I can't see Chicago. I don't think St. Louis is going to make the playoffs. My colleague Kevin Allen at USA Today had an interesting prediction. He tried to predict point totals for every NHL team, mm-hmm. and he doesn't have anybody in the NHL having more than 104 points, and that's extraordinary. Like the, you know, we've talked about parity for a million years, but if Kevin's right, and you know, I mean, he could just be you know trying to stir up some talk. You know, he thinks it will be closer this year than it has ever been. He's got Vegas and Colorado as being kind of also ran, and then the gap between 1 and 29 is, you know, 15 to 18 points. So, I don't know. I mean, I'll give you Anaheim because I think that they're due. I also think that, you know, Anaheim at the start of the season, it may not be, the, you know, great because of the Kessler injury and the fact that two of their top four defensemen aren't going to be ready. But if those guys are healthy, by the time the playoffs roll around, their A lineup on paper right now is the best in the Western Conference. So I'll take Anaheim and Pittsburgh, but I'm pretty sure I'll be wrong.
Kevin Allen joins us in about 40 minutes time, so we'll have his predictions at that point in time. But for now, Eric Tkachuk, we always appreciate your time. We appreciate your work. It's great work at theathletic.com. Really enjoying your stuff there. And Eric, again, thank you so much for joining us this evening on NHL This Week.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Take care, Eric. When we come back, we'll do a quick preview of the Pacific Division. Many more teams, not a lot of time left. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.